Coming up on All About Android, we're going to discuss everything from the Android Dev Summit that just happened last week. Also, everything from Samsung's developer conference that also happened last week. We've got the new Fossil Sport smartwatch. We're going to talk about some issues with the Tasker app and permissions and a whole lot more. All About Android is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by CuriosityStream, a subscription streaming service that offers over 2,000 documentaries and nonfiction titles from some of the world's best filmmakers, including exclusive originals. Visit CuriosityStream.com/twit and use code TWIT to get 1 month free. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/android. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 395, recorded on Tuesday, November 13th, 2018. We're your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion.
What's happening, Florence Ion and Ron Richards?
Hello, Jason.
What's happening, Hi. Jason Howell?
I really like how your background flow just like flows right into my background with the greenness.
Well, you know, I'm trying to be present even though I'm not physically present. Yeah. But, you know, it's very smoky outside. Very hard for me to drive.
Yeah. Thankfully, your camera is not smoky. My camera is not smoky. We might feel it in our lungs, but that's about where it ends. Joining us today. Welcome back to the show, Wen Tu Dao. Randomlytyping.com would be your URL, but you are a Google developer expert. You are host or one of two hosts of Android Dialogues on YouTube. How are you doing, Wen?
Great, Jason. So good to be back. I also feel very like, I feel like the camaraderie here because I am also like not in studio. Ron's not in studio. Flo's not in studio.
Yep. We're the Skype crew.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm outnumbered. I'm surrounded by TVs today.
Although,
it's okay.
It is funny because I will say that when I was at the Pixel event in New York, I was talking to somebody from Google and I was explaining the show and I was like, yeah, no, so they're in California and I'm in New York and they're like, oh, how do you record? I'm like, oh, we do it through Skype. And they're like, not Hangouts?
Uh-huh.
And then I just said, have you tried to use Hangouts lately? But no, I didn't actually say that. But
you just changed the subject really quickly.
Exactly. Oh, are those donuts? And I walked away. So.
Look over there. Where? Hey, where did you go? You were just standing here. Wen, it's so great to get you on today, especially because as everyone will see, this has been a very developer-y week.
Yeah.
And as we were putting together the rundown, I was like, wow, this is a lot of really great stuff to talk about. But on a show like this, we need someone who understands this on a deeper level. And obviously, like you were at the event, right? You were at the Android Dev Summit.
I was. It was a very Android-y week last week. We also had our Google Developer Expert Summit. So it was like all Android all week. So I'm kind of happy to keep the Android train rolling.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun week.
Yeah,
and Samsung tried to get in there. Samsung was like, oh, well, us too. And we'll talk all about that. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to get to it in a second. But first, a reminder, twit.tv/AAA if you want to subscribe to this show. If you haven't already, you probably have. But if you haven't, do that. And now, there it is. Whoa, we got a new hero image.
New photo.
New photo. We track this on the show now, apparently. Every 2 to 3 months, a new image appears. And I like this one a lot. Very, very good. Thank you, Victor. And now's your time to shine because it's time for the news.
If it was up to Josh or Mac and Josh, he'd make you listen to Android News. But here's an Android News and stay if you want.
Oh, they can just stay if they want, huh? They can just leave and
I'm not
whatever.
Gonna force them.
Well, that's true.
Okay.
That's good.
But they should. They should.
I think they will. I think they want to. So, Android Dev Summit happened last week. computer history museum in Silicon Valley. And I mean,
by Silicon Valley, you mean San Jose.
San Jose,
just,
yeah.
Just in case anybody.
Yeah.
Well, that technically is the valley. That is the
whole area.
The low point. Yeah, there it is.
Or actually, I'm sorry, it's in Mountain View. It's actually right next door to Google HQ.
Okay. All right. Well, there we go. Android developers flocked. I'm assuming they flocked there. Actually, we have some Elaine from Paris, France, who flocked. She's a GDE. She's sitting here in the studio watching. So it's really great to have you here, Elaine.
Hi, Elaine. I'm so sorry. We're not there. You have the Skype crew.
No, we met at the summit.
She flocked to Petaluma after the event was done.
That would be the place you would flock.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are lots of flocks happening here. There we go.
There we are, waving. Wave, Elaine.
Hi.
So we have not one but two developers in presence that were awesome at this event, which is really, really great to know. So let's start talking about it. I know that there were a lot of updates, or there were at least a couple of announcements there about kind of how developers can work with their apps, and there's a new in-app API that's launching that allows developers to push users toward updating their apps in a couple of different ways. From my understanding of this, one way is like if a developer releases an app and it's got a pretty nasty bug in it and they want to make sure no one's using the app in its nasty bug sort of way, a developer can kind of insert some way that, you know, maybe a nag screen at the top when you launch it that says, you need to update this right now and push them towards the update. Am I explaining that right, Wen?
Yeah. There's the immediate in-app update and I think the flexible one. So, but yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the naggy screen will look like, but yeah, just like, sorry. And I believe like they won't let you won't be able to kind of interact with the app until you have updated properly. Whereas the other one is kind of like, yeah, just kind of like whenever on your time.
Hey,
just letting you know.
We feel like it's important, but you can do that. And then that will update in the background while a user is actually using the app, right?
Mm-hmm. I believe so, yeah.
Does that happen right now? I guess the download happens in the background. Mm-hmm. If you happen to be using an app and it's downloading the update, it can download it. But then once it gets there, like I've had the experience where I'm using an app and then suddenly, boom, I'm booted out to the home screen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what just happened? And it's like,
yeah, or you come back and it's like, huh, the fonts are different or something else is different.
Everything is different.
Yeah.
So do we think a forced update API could be abused? Like that was kind of where my mind went immediately. If somebody wanted to, you know, make sure that everybody updated to, I don't know, a bad version of the app going kind of in the opposite direction, maybe they had, you know, different intents on, I don't know, something fishy.
But would,
is
but
that
would a bad,
possibility?
Do the updates need to be vetted by Google first?
That's a good question.
I mean, I know the app upon being submitted to the Play Store needs to be vetted, but are they looking at the package for an update before it triggers the auto update API? I wonder.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know too much about it just yet since it was just announced, but I assume that, I mean, part of it is kind of like due diligence on the part of the publisher just to make sure that everything is above board. I'm honestly just not sure if you could get a malicious actor in there, but I mean, it's all kind of like just developer due diligence, which, you know, your mileage might vary. Some of us are better than others, but we'll see.
And I got to imagine there'll be some sort of rate limit too. Like you can't push out if you push out an update every day, they're probably going to ding you or block you at some point or something like that. Right. So
yeah, I imagine so.
Yeah.
So that would be a good way. You know, we've seen a decent amount of examples of where something like this might actually be very useful. So I could see it being a good tool in the belt of developers to make sure that their apps aren't used when they shouldn't be used, or at least a bad version of it isn't used, to kind of force people in the direction of updating. That's a lot of power in the hands of the developers, but I think the intention is good there.
I think we're definitely excited. There's so many times where there's something that's out of a developer's hands, especially when we're using like third-party APIs or other services where something changes, someone didn't tell us, and we're, you know, it's kind of up to us to kind of get like the fix out to folks as fast as possible. And like, I know it kind of sounds icky, forced updates. It always sounds a little bit icky, but I think someone I was talking to earlier made the point of like, you know, when a website changes, you kind of just expect it. When something updates on a website for an app or a product that you love, just expect it right away. And we kind of have a little bit of a disconnect on mobile. So this mm-hmm. is kind of getting us closer to, you know, getting people the most updated, the fastest.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I still feel like this is going to upset a very small, minuscule subset of users who just absolutely need to have version 10.3 of a specific app. Ooh, versus 10.7. Yeah. And, you know, APK Mirror is like the way that they've been updating to try and just like hold on to this one feature. Like, I already hear their screams in the distance.
That's a really good point. Sometimes yeah. people want to hold on to these things and they understand that there's a reason why they shouldn't, but they get something out of it when they do. I wonder if this will kind of, I mean, it sounds like it would kind of force them in that direction.
Or people with really, really old devices mm-hmm. and they kind of want to hold on to the device out of just sheer desperation.
That version, yeah. Yeah, could be. I could see that.
Yep.
Ron, you get a fun one.
Yeah, so last week we were talking about Samsung's developer event and their announcement and kind of showing the foldable phone prototype. And there's some confusion in the audience as to what my take on the foldable phone. I was laughing because they look so ridiculous, but I'm very excited about this. In fact, I was having a conversation earlier today with some folks at a very, very large company in the tech space, and foldable devices came up. And this is happening, folks. And nothing cements more than the fact that in the developer conference, the developer event, Google said announced that they're going to have official support for foldables, which is just amazing. So basically, foldable display phones like the ones that Samsung and others have been teasing for the past couple of years, and we're going to get more on that later because it's just the best topic ever. Google is trying to get ahead of it with this new category to bake in support at the OS level, and that way we can avoid any fragmentation that might arise. Which I gotta say, good job, Google. Good. You see the writing on the wall. Let's get it in the OS in advance so there's not, you know, kind of bizarre fragmentation. Google says it's working closely with the OEM partners to develop a common API for developers. And as for now, Google points to a current feature called screen continuity that tracks when screen size changes from rotation, as one example of how that works. So, I got to tell you, by 2021, foldable OLED screens will be affordable enough that they're going to be mass-produced in the marketplace. And so, you know, the fact that we're 3 years ahead of that now and getting it baked in at the OS level, I think, shows you that the future is going to be foldable. Hands down.
The future is foldable.
The future is foldable.
How far into the future before foldable, satisfies what we're... What we
2021. I'll put it right here. 2021.
Okay. All right. I'll write that in a random cell in this.
How many years did it take the Note to become like pervasive? Because the first year of the Note was pretty. It was. I mean, we did Android in the wild because the Note was so ridiculous. And have you ever seen one and all that sort of stuff? But then like a couple of years went by and the larger phone form factor became. It was 3 years. Look at that.
3 years. So the second year was very popular, Note 2. And then the Note 3 came and it was a bit kind of like meh. But that is when ginormous phones were coming out and companies were starting to figure like people want big phones, but they don't want ginormous phones.
Right. There is such thing as too big.
Yes, precisely. Which I'm thinking of the Samsung Galaxy Mega, if anybody remembers that.
Oh, I remember. Yeah. I remember that.
It's really big.
It looked like you were going to hop in there and say something. What is your take on the foldable baked into the OS thing?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's pretty exciting. And I mean, I guess now it kind of seems silly, right? The was it the Flex Pi Flex, the one that's not Samsung. I mean, it all kind of looks like
the one from last. I think we talked about it on the show.
The
last
one that The Verge keeps.
Yeah. A week or two.
Okay. Posting.
And I think as a developer, it's one of those things which I think we see a lot of potential, especially where for apps where, you know, you're spending a lot of content. And it's always like as a developer, it's always a challenge to make content look good, both on a regular, non-ridiculous phone size and also tablet size. Some of us do it better than others. Some of us opt out completely. And I think it's really interesting to see how people can leverage that to make a really interesting experience that kind of goes from a small, you know, small size to a larger size, and how you can maybe, like, I guess, gear the experience to kind of move smoothly, and how you can take advantage of that. I think it's kind of, I think it's neat. Are we there yet? Not yet. But I mean, the fact is actually listening to kind of like the first talk they had on foldables, a lot of like the screen continuity is kind of just playing off of stuff that we already have in terms of for developers. Yeah. Like it plays a little bit off of the multi-window multitasking configuration changes that we've always had to deal with, like from going from landscape to portrait. So, I mean, a lot of it was kind of like, oh, okay. Like to some extent, hopefully things will, and I'm going to regret saying this, I bet, just work to some extent when the foldables come out. If you are a good developer and have done good practices, so I just think it's exciting.
And
that's the ultimate, the extra stuff.
And that's the ultimate goal, to have things just work, as you said. Like and if Google is ahead of it enough, if we look at things that just didn't work upon when they came out, whether it's whether it's the tablet, the multi kind of purpose, the Pixelbook or things like that didn't work from the first get go, or the notch, or little innovations that are happening that Google has no control over, they see this coming.
Wait, are we going to have notches on the foldables?
Oh, I hope not.
Heck yeah, we're going to mix foldable paradigms notches all over the place. We're mixing paradigms.
I'm fine with the notches. It's fine. Hey, but I can't wait for this. We're going to talk more about the foldable phone, though. I have more thoughts about the foldable hardware. But from a developer standpoint, it's good to see it. I agree with you. Make it just work. And so they're ahead of the game on it. So good stuff.
Yeah, I hope that the transition between one state to another is more seamless than sometimes what we've seen with Android. I feel like even going landscape to portrait sometimes has been kind of a janky, stuttery experience, let alone going from an ultra widescreen tablet down into a single, display or like a phone display. I don't know. I hope it's neat. I hope that when we do this and we go down that road, things get manicured to a point to where it's nice and smooth and you don't just kind of go, oh, well, I mean, it made it there. So props for that. But we'll see.
Should we talk about slices of things instead of folding things?
Yeah. Slices. Let's talk about some slices.
Slice and dice.
Okay. All right. You guys remember slices, right? From Google I/O. We're not talking about pizza, oranges. We're talking about slices. So those can now be found in Google search, which is super exciting because that was one of the things that was supposed to make being a user, like, basically it was the thing that lets you go in and out. You don't have to commit. You could just go in and out. So right now it's available as a public early access program with partners like Kayak and Doist. So if you are looking for travel for the holiday, might be just a good way to test that out. Slices from those apps will appear in Google search app when relevant to the search query. And again, traveling is a great way to test this. So let's say you want to search to, I don't know, go to Hawaii or go back home to Pittsburgh. You can search for that and see what comes up. Or you can search for photos from Google Photos and they'll appear there in their own little slice.
Yeah. Like do a search for Hawaii and suddenly your Google Photos from Hawaii appear in a little carousel or something along those lines.
Remember when you were in Hawaii and life was just nice?
Don't you want to go back there?
I
do remember. I do remember that actually. And I would love to go back there.
Honestly, that's watching my Chromecast screensaver. It's like the one on the living room. It's just all the trips we've taken. Like, it's like vacation tees every time.
Yeah. Don't you wish you were here still?
Yes.
So I'm curious to see how slices works. Like, it's so funny. So many of these announcements happen at Google I/O, and then throughout the course of the year, you just kind of forget about them.
Yeah,
slices I just completely forgot about.
Well, you do forget about them as a user, right?
Because
I would, like, we need to ask our developer.
Yeah.
Do developers forget about them?
And are you excited, like, about the capabilities of slices?
I am, and we've at work, so I work at Trello, and I think we've talked about this a lot. Now, whether we get around to it is kind of a different thing, and whether the kind of the API lets us do what we want to do. But as a developer, I'm actually really excited, and it kind of goes back to, again, to kind of some of the other ways that Google has been trying to reduce friction and enable you to kind of get to content to apps faster. So kind of thinking about like rich notifications and being able to reply in line. Now it's kind of in the same vein where, hey, like as an app like developer, I often like deal with user content, right? And part of the friction is finding content, surfacing it, like making a user go like, okay, to this screen, to that screen, to that screen to get to where they want. And so the idea of having your content in a kind of rich form show up in Google search is super exciting. you know, your mileage might vary on kind of like how it works for you, because I was looking through the API and it's actually very limited. So you can't expect kind of super bells and whistles. There's like templates basically that you can use to display your data. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be limited as at this point. So, but if you have content that you can present in a nice, like kind of like interactable way with those templates, I personally am excited. We're still like, you know, trying to get through at work, but I think it is just another great way to integrate with the OS. And again, bringing content to your users in a really like less frictiony kind of way.
Nice. We're looking at your co-host on Android Dialogues,
Chucky's
sketch notes, which she sent me the links for. She's like, oh, by the way, use these on the show if you like. She's so talented at this. It's crazy.
These are great. Yeah, I love those.
Awesome. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
So there's something to look forward to there. And, you know, as Google likes to do with these things, I'm sure over time, like you're talking about it being very limited in scope now, mm-hmm. once things are solidified, I imagine that opens up a little bit more. Somewhere down the line, it goes from limited partners to anybody can do this to let's broaden the capability of it and give you more power. What I wonder about sometimes with these things is developers, and you could probably answer this better than I could, but developers have only a certain amount of bandwidth to focus on some of these yep. different features yeah. from an OS level. Yeah. How do developers then choose this is important enough for me to spend my time developing for it? I mean, it's kind of got to rise to the surface in order for you to make that determination, right?
Yeah, and actually some of the devs and I were talking about this at the summit, and this is kind of one of those problems, especially because Slices is a Android-only feature. Yeah, and right. generally, when you're developing, you have an iOS app as well. And so a lot of times, in terms of like features, especially for mobile, you kind of have to, especially, you know, for the folks at the top, their stakeholders that are kind of worrying about the experience across all platforms, generally things that are very specialized like Slices or anything else that's kind of, you know, Android-centric tends to kind of get pushed a little bit backwards because we want to focus on things that all users can take benefit from. So, I mean, that's kind of how it is sometimes. It is always bandwidth and, of course, like kind of more businessy-centric features and things like that, things that actually, you know, make us money or like mm-hmm. that are features that we wanted to ship. It's really hard. And I think that's probably why you might not have seen Slices so much, is this perennial developer problem of, hey, there's this cool thing. Can we get it in? And like, no, you got to fix some bugs first.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, that kind of plays into it as well. And especially since it's kind of new, it's kind of hard for, I guess, our product folks to say, okay, what is the actual return? Like, what is the retention or kind of what's the analytics-y words? Like, how much like action or kind of, you know, engagement do we get? There we go.
Sure.
Engagement.
ROI.
Do we get from our users? Yeah. ROI. Thank you. Yeah. Do we get from this? And yeah. because it's so new, it's hard to say. So.
Yeah. So you just kind of, yeah. And on one hand, that could really play to your advantage, right? Like if you decided to invest the time in it and then users are really stoked about the idea, but there are a few examples and then they find out you are one of the examples, that could drive a lot of engagement if people get really excited about the feature in general. It could also not. People yeah, could be like, I don't even know it exists.
Yeah, sometimes like I think that, you know, on a lot of products I've been in the past, like we've tried to take advantage of certain features, you know, like certain APIs that come out and they seem like a really good idea and then you invest time into them and either like the usage doesn't work out, the experience isn't so great, and then you kind of just slowly deprecate it like 3 or 4 years later, you quietly delete the code and yeah. no one notices. So yeah, it's always tough. And that's why I think sometimes it's difficult as a user. I'm always just like, yeah, why can't we have all the new things? But as a developer, I'm like, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand. It's always like getting buy-in from the people at the top and then finding time to actually do it for the rest of us, like yeah. closer to the bottom. So, but
you can't, because there's humans and capacity on the other end of that. And what, you know, how much capacity do they have to actually do that thing? It's not unlimited. Another thing that was discussed there, and I'm interested in this right now, Google revealed the difference in battery consumption on devices with OLED screens. We all know that OLED screens, you know, you can improve battery performance if you just leave the pixels dark because they're not firing up. On other screen technologies, even dark pixels are being lit up and that consumes battery. Well, they were using the 2016 Pixel as an example. Google showed how max brightness black used around 60 milliamps versus max brightness white using around 325 milliamps. And then you extend that over the use case of a phone over days or weeks or whatever and how much battery you save. Well, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I certainly have. Google has been on a tear bringing night mode to its apps because material theming is very white focused. And you know that ultimately that ends up using a lot more battery on OLED devices than black focused apps. So they're updating their apps most recently with the Contacts app that they updated a couple of days ago. And when you actually tweeted about the advantage of dash night qualifiers while you were there, what does or will that do exactly?
Yeah, so the thing is that so everything takes a little bit of work. But what's really interesting is that, so this is like a developer thing. Basically, when you're an Android developer and you're trying to, say, develop an app that kind of works on landscape, works on, like, you know, kind of a small, like, pixel density device, a large density pixel device, Android allows you to actually kind of to kind of bucket resources to say, okay, I want to apply like this text size or this drawable on like this particular orientation or this screen size. And so night mode is kind of like that. Night mode is just like another qualifier. It's another kind of like way for us to bucket kind of like certain colors and themes and styles and draw and kind of drawables, as we call them. And so what's really neat is that the night mode is actually done through this mechanism. So basically you say, okay, so you can define a theme, you can define a bunch of resources, images, text colors, whatever, and then just say, hey, this is for night mode. And then it should just work when your phone is in night mode. So it's a really kind of succinct, organized way for us to actually play with night mode. And actually it's a really good way for us to also kind of isolate that development from kind of our regular, you know, kind of, I guess however your app looks now. It's not like, you know, we'll throw on some night mode slapdash and you'll start seeing kind of weird colors everywhere. It's a good kind of like isolated, controlled way for us to kind of start adding in features like this. So it's super easy, and it also kind of forces us as developers to be a little more organized, because you have to be kind of organized and separate all the things very, you know, evenly. So it's just really cool. Sorry, it's a little bit of a developer geek out moment, but
no, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And it's just really cool. And again, it's something that should just work. It's not like we have to go in and do all of the night mode ourselves. It's a mechanism in Android that we can take advantage of, in which you should.
I feel like that's what people are kind of clamoring for, right? Like, night mode inside of apps is nice. What would be amazing is to just turn on night mode, like a universal night mode, and say, I want my phone to always operate in night mode, have all these apps skin themselves appropriately. But that's a lot of, like, I mean, obviously the developer would want to have a say as far as like what that skinning looks like. So then that requires the developer to do work around that. Is that kind of part of what this is all about?
Yeah. So it's not going to be for free. And they gave some examples during the talk of kind of what happens if you don't kind of do things like, kind of, if you don't kind of follow the patterns that allow you to leverage night mode. So it is work. It's not like, you know, you're going to turn on night mode on your phone and everything's going to be night modified.
Right.
And there are going to be like edge cases. Like, they actually showed you, oh, what happens if you just inverse the colors? Is that kind of sufficient? Well, it's not. So it is going to be some work. So definitely I'd say, like, if you're a consumer and you want night mode in your app, you should definitely kind of like ask for it nicely. And then kind of, if it's something that people want, then, you know, we'll do it. And yeah. I mean, my thing is also with like the battery life, and also, you know, how much savings that is, because I know for us, our app is kind of has a lot of users in emerging markets. So saving battery is important. I mean, saving a battery is important for everyone. So I feel like, apart from just the kind of coolness and like whatever your mileage is on whether you like contrasty or not contrasty screens, night mode is just kind of important, I think, in general.
Agreed. Cool stuff. All right, Ron, you got the last one.
I do have the last one, and it's a good one. Android Studio got an update as well to the 3.3 Beta 3 with improvements to speed up build times via improvements to profiling and analysis tools clarity into the things slowing builds down. But I'm burying the lead there, because Google is making Chrome OS support for Android Studio official starting in early 2019. This likely would mean that no need for an emulator to test apps, just do it within Chrome OS. Android Studio uses a lot of storage space, so that's a consideration. And also has updates to app bundles and things like that. So, Wynn, how do you feel about app bundles and these updates to Android Studio?
Oh my gosh, everything is for me today. It's just
it is. You're welcome to our show.
I'm tired of me talking. So in regards to all of the changes, so basically, if you ever talk to an Android developer, probably their number one thing, their number one wish is to be for faster build times. Because that's kind of something that we all struggle with, especially when you get apps that are really large, very kind of feature heavy. This is kind of just a thing that we all struggle with. And we've had debates at work about, okay, do we want to start getting everyone desktops that are like kind of like totally blinged out because we're spending kind of at the worst end of it, 12 to 15 minutes building. Like that's just, it's a productivity issue. So I think what's really interesting with this is that, you know, I think a lot of us for different reasons have wanted kind of an alternate device to be able to develop on. A lot of us are kind of on Macs. Many Android developers develop on Mac just because we use a command line a lot. So the kind of Unix-based OS is really awesome for us, but we kind of want alternatives, right? And so Chrome OS has kind of been like kind of trying to entice us. But the problem is, and the problem goes again to build times and resources and the power of the actual device. So if they can, it's kind of like two ways, right? Can Android Studio get a little bit faster, a little bit leaner, and can kind of like Chrome OS devices keep up? So I'm excited, and I actually am looking to get like a Chrome OS device. I've been looking at the slate, but as it stands now, I have to kind of be a little bit measured. I'm going to see if I can get the i7 slate because it's always about resources. We're always trying to find like the biggest, fattest, like baddest machine to develop on. So it's exciting, but it's also, will the devices that we can develop on be able to keep up with our stupid, big, slow builds? So, yeah.
Ka-ching.
Yeah. So we'll see. Get my i7 slate and we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So did you order the i7? Well, no, the i7 is still on pre-order, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. I probably will get one and give it a shot and just be incredibly sad if it doesn't quite work out. But
yeah,
I think people want it. I think developers definitely want like an alternative. Like I know like Chuki, for example, develops on Linux. My good buddy at work, Vish, he develops on Linux on a Inspiron XPS. So I think we want alternatives and it'll be good if we can get one from a Pixelbook, but I'm still kind of very measured.
Yeah.
Kind of. So
yeah, it remains to be seen.
I want alternatives too. Everybody does.
Yeah. For different reasons. I'm on an alternative. I'm on an Acer Chromebook 13 right now that I've been playing around with. It's not bad.
Wow.
It's
that a touch is so screen, alt, Jason.
I know. You know. I broke away from the Pixel family for the last couple of weeks. It's not a bad, I got to say, it's not a bad Chromebook at all. It's got a nice feel to it. Metal chassis. The keyboard and touchpad are nice. It just doesn't have a touchscreen. And it's not like I use the touchscreen on a Chrome OS device all the time, but I like to have it.
I love to just like hunch with my Chromebook and like touch it. I want to just be able to just put my fingers on it and do things and like scroll with my fingers.
Yeah, it's not doing anything.
If I'm just like,
anything.
I do that all the time when I use my...
What, Ron?
I was going to say, when you're used to it and it goes away, that's got to be a trip.
Yeah. Even my Windows machine has a touchscreen because now everything has a touchscreen.
Yeah.
I tried to touch a MacBook the other day. I just remembered you can't do that.
Nope. Can't do that. Not yet. Nope. Maybe someday.
Maybe.
So that was the Android Dev Summit, and we've got another developer conference to talk about. But that's not right now. Well, you got to wait a few moments and then we'll talk about it. In the meantime, we're going to thank the sponsor of this episode, and that is DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean actually provides the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications with Droplets, which are virtual machines that are a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. And you can choose from standard or CPU-optimized Droplets and customize from there, because DigitalOcean is designed for developers. The easy-to-use control panel and API lets developers spend more time coding and less time managing their infrastructure. Industry-leading price to performance as well. You can access the compute resources that you need at the lowest rates, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. And you'll always know what you're going to pay per month, because DigitalOcean has a flat pricing structure across all data center regions. And you get a whole bunch of things at no additional cost. You get 99.99% uptime SLA. You get cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, global data centers, enterprise class SSDs, an easy to use API, and a whole lot more. Over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest growing startups, rely on DigitalOcean. That's to remove their infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. So you can sign up today, and if you do, you'll receive a free $100 credit. All you have to do is go to do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of All About Android. All right, we've been waiting for this. It's the hardware block. Let's do it.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
And Flo, you were at this event.
Flo, give me the juice. Give it to us.
Yes, give it to us.
The juice, huh? Okay, I guess I can give you the juice. The juice is that I have not really been thinking about the foldable phone since I left it last week. Okay. But the thing about it is that it wasn't even there in person. I mean, it was to some extent, but it was really just a silhouette. So for anybody who's just completely confused what the heck we're talking about right now, let me roll back real quickly. So last week was the Samsung Developers Conference in downtown San Francisco, held at the Moscone West. And I was there in the crowd watching the keynote. And toward the end of the keynote, they basically brought out this surprise of a foldable device. Now, they call it a foldable phone, but as you could see from whatever this GIF or this video, is that it's just a device. It's supposed to be a phone, but it doesn't look very much like the phones that we are used to using in this day and age. And it wasn't even like behind a piece of glass or anything. It was just right there on stage. And if you were lucky enough to have a photographer by your side that day, the photographer got maybe a slightly close-up look of it. But still, that close-up look was in the dark with just a silhouette. So I just want to temper everyone's expectations out there that, yes, the foldable phone was somewhat introduced, but it wasn't really the foldable phone. It was just the foldable display technology that is being introduced. So it is there.
Listen, Flo, don't fear the fold. I'm telling you, it was there. It was, did they actually fold it?
Yeah.
It folded.
Yeah.
So this thing that folded is called an Infinity Flex display. That's what Samsung's calling it. And it is OLED. And the one that we saw on this silhouetted device was a 4.58-inch 840x1960 resolution screen on the outside. And then when it folds out, it's a 7.3-inch 1536x2152 resolution screen. And that's like the tablet, that's the tablet side. And when it folds back together, it folds just like how you would close a book. So Samsung says this will be released. It says the device with this technology will be released in the first half of 2019, which is quickly approaching. And it is worth noting the first half of 2019 falls on the line of when MWC is, which is usually when Samsung has a Galaxy S event. So we've got some time to to get excited about this, or, you know, to really see a product come out from this. Sources say that the release is expected in March, which falls along with that MWC timeline, and that it will be crazy expensive, around $1,770. Let me say that easier. Around $1,770 USD.
I like 1,770.
Sometimes I try to do it with the teens and it doesn't work.
Yeah. I like that.
It will be released along with the Galaxy S10, which will have 5G, just to add that little bit of tidbit in there. Now, again, I was at the event, I was in the audience, but there was a show floor, like an exhibit hall, so that developers could kind of walk around and have little demo stations of some of the different things you can do with Samsung devices and, you know, Samsung coding thing. I couldn't think of a word. But this wasn't on the show floor. Couple of other things were, but this was not. This was very much a very special, you know, journalistic access, And I didn't go with an outlet. I kind of just went as a free agent. So I didn't get that kind of insider look, but a lot of other people did. I mean, the CNET had a little thing about it. This website had a little thing about it. Yonhap News. It's a Korean site. The Yonhap News Agency, akin to what would be our Associated Press.
Yeah.
And so this kind of went out. And that's where the source came out that this was going to be coming out in March. There were other things at the Samsung Developers Conference, though, besides the foldable phone. But I feel like we want to talk about the foldable phone first. And I feel like Ron really wants to talk about the foldable phone.
What do you have to say about the foldable phone, Ron?
Well, I gotta say, I think it's really interesting. It's that sucker sure is thick when it's folded. That's like the size of a remote control from like 1995. That's a thick device.
Yeah, hopefully it has an IR blaster on it, so it can.
I really think we know foldable OLED is a real thing, and it's a matter of when the price comes down. 2019 is on track with it being a unique kind of oddity in the marketplace, and by 2021 it will be it'll be ubiquitous. The thing to watch here is going to be the thickness of the device and the thickness of the bend of the fold. Right now it looks really, really fat. Like if you're looking at the pictures of the kind of sketch of it folded in half, you see it's just the bezel is very, very thick. And even the Pi one that we were talking about, the Pi Flex or whatever was last week. Remember, I was laughing because it's such a ridiculous, Microsoft Surface Book-esque kind of folded, curve to it. The manufacturer who gets that fold and that curve down and minimized to the millimeter level, that's when this will go, everyone will go crazy for it. Like once that happens, when it doesn't look ridiculous when it's folded, then these things will be amazing. Samsung starting, man. They're forcing the hand. Them and the other folks, the crazy folks out there, Google's listening by putting the support in Android. I gotta imagine that Apple's paying attention to this. And Samsung also makes displays, everybody. Not only do they make phones, but they make components and displays that other OEMs use.
Yeah.
And this is what that was. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So think about it. So, we're looking at their bet on foldable. Is a foldable iPhone and down the road with a Samsung display. That's definitely possible. So,
Ron said it first. It's definitely possible.
Future's foldable. That price point is ridiculous, though. I will say that $1,770 is like, it's a gimmick. At this point, it's a gimmick. Give me killer functionality.
It's not a gimmick. It's a first adopter's.
It's a first adopter's fee. That's fair.
You want to be the first adopter. That's how much you can pay. And, Samsung, as we talked about earlier, set the precedent for large screen displays with the Note.
Sure.
Kind of introduced the idea that you could have that in your pocket. And so, of course, they want to be the first ones to market with this thing, or at least the first ones to claim that the technology was, that they were first with it. It's like being the first on the moon. We could say that Russia was the first on the moon, but was it really them?
I don't know. That's out of my pay grade.
Mine too. Moving on.
All I want to say is the Sony Tablet P is always the device that I go back to, which was back in like 2011 or whatever, and it was a clamshell foldable tablet. But meanwhile, it had the seam, and it was two screens that folded, and you just had this large, ugly seam down the middle. So the fact that Samsung's basically doing that form factor, but with no seam, and I mean, it looks about as solid as anything. Granted, you didn't really get a whole lot to work with because it was dark on stage, and all you saw was the screen lit up, but didn't see any puckering. So there's that. No visible pucker.
Hold on. You didn't see it because it was dark and it was just a silhouette. Yeah, I mean, come on.
I know.
All right.
I know.
Skeptic.
I'm just saying. what do you think? Now that we've seen something, are you going to spend $1,800 on this?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be that early adopter with the foldable hipster tags.
Right.
I just wonder if at some point we're gonna have like an inverse notch where everyone hates the notch. There's gonna be like the crease, and that'll be like the foldable thing. Mm-hmm. I want to see not just that. I think it's really cool. Okay, so you got like kind of like the phone screen and the tablet screen. I really want to see like manufacturers or and or Google kind of make it, I don't know, just like do something with it. Like if there's going to be like the spine, I guess as a fold, can you do something with that? Can you give us kind of like another,
like an edge screen?
Yeah, like an edge screen or something to play with, or at least, I don't know, somehow make it, I don't know, if it's going to be that bad, if it's going to be like Ron said, a remote control brick in my pocket, I don't know, just do something more with what we got. Like, can you make something another out screen. Of all that extra? Another screen. The screens within screens within screens.
Nested screens.
I guess it's
screens.
Infinitely foldable.
Yes.
Like the fractal. The fractal foldable phone. It just unfolds and folds and folds forever.
Oh.
Now, I'd pay $1,700 for that.
Yes.
Come on. I'd also pay $1,700 for a phone that I can fold up into one of those fortune teller things we did in elementary school. Where, you know.
I would write out for that in a minute. Oh, my God.
Yep.
So. Yes. We're giving Samsung money here, basically, for free with all of these wonderful ideas. So, yeah. Samsung, you're welcome. Samsung did talk about other things. It wasn't just the 5 second seconds of showing off a phone in darkness on the stage. They showed off their new One UI UI based on Android Pi, basically when their new phones ship Android Pi, which they say is going to happen on the 9 series in January of next year. It's going to come with their new revision of their UI called One UI, with a focus on shrinking the elements of the UI to adapt to single-handed operation, specifically with larger smartphones. So how they're focusing on doing that is they're placing what they call interaction zones near the bottom of the screen. So the things you would actually want to do with your thumb, let's say, if you're holding a phone with one hand, would be placed near the bottom kind of half of the screen. And then up top would be a viewing area. And there would be housed more things like larger header text or, you know, information, contextual information.
Extremely large header text.
Yes, based on...
The entire... sorry to interrupt, Jason. No. I just wanted to add, because I did get to play with the new interface, and it's Google-like, mm-hmm. but it's very much Samsung Google-like.
So, and did you like it? Like, obviously, Samsung always gets a bad rap for TouchWiz.
Yes.
It's come a long way, and then this is the next iteration.
It felt like a natural, a more natural transition from the Pixel 3 that I had in my hand at the show and the Galaxy S9 Plus that I had seen the interface on. Mm-hmm. So it you know, the notification shade looks similar. They had the bubbled quick settings, the header looked similar, the font looks a little more similar, the fact that all of the major functionality is now at the bottom of the interface screen. I just feel like it's Samsung kind of saying, okay, we're gonna kind of do it a little more in a Google way, but we're gonna make it seem like this is our version of the Google way. That's what it is, which means a giant messages header in the messages app, because technically what the heck is your thumb doing all the way at the top? Like, there's no reason for it to be up there unless you have a really long thumb, in which case call us.
Well, I would just like to note to remember this conversation when we're in the arena.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say that.
So there you go. Seed, I get it.
There's a tease.
The tease forward. Okay, well, I'm curious. I'm interested. I know that some people, probably those same people that you were talking about earlier, Flo, that you said that small percentage of people that were going to complain about whatever it was we were talking about at the top block, are the same people that are going to complain about the fact that it's not information dense enough, because that top viewing area is just used with like a big title instead of actually putting lots of useful information.
But that's been the problem.
People will complain about that too.
That's been the issue of the Samsung UI, is that it's always been this really busy interface.
Yeah.
And I think like with the way material theming is going and just how ubiquitous that's supposed to be, and the fact that Samsung is making Android phones, it's making Android phones with Google services on them, you have to start matching the aesthetic a little bit, you know, otherwise people are just going to keep complaining.
Yeah.
Well, you want to bring those Yelp reviews down.
I like where Samsung's come. like over the last couple of years, especially the design of their hardware.
I mean, Android's come a long way.
Well, and Android has too, yeah. But Samsung and TouchWiz, that was a rough time. TouchWiz was a rough time.
Yep.
So that's going to start happening. I guess there's a beta rolling out this month in the U.S., Germany, and Korea. And then, of course, the Android Pi with One UI is going to roll out January 2019. So look for... Oh, and UI-wide dark mode. We were talking about this earlier. Mm-hmm, that's going to be embedded into Samsung phones as well, which makes me wonder kind of what we were talking about earlier when on... kind of how apps are going to interact with that. I guess that would just be Samsung's apps probably, and their system UI is going to tailor to that dark mode.
Well, Android Pi does that inherently, right? So
it does. Right. So I've got a new, a new wallpaper, that like a dark wallpaper. And now I'm to pull that up. If it was a brighter wallpaper, these would be themed white. But because it's a darker wallpaper, they're themed darker. So, So you're right.
So
and then also settings. Ends. Settings is dark as well.
So. I think I just want to end with, it's also just a good reminder to remember that the reason Android Pi is coming a little bit later to Samsung phones is because of all this like UI restructuring all of this stuff that has to be done to the Samsung apps. And it's kind of a bummer. People are getting Pi like a lot later, but you still got a Samsung phone.
Yeah. Expect those distribution really numbers phone. In January to jump pretty considerably.
Hopefully. Yeah. It's the carriers, right?
That's true. That's very true. All right, Ron, you got the last one.
All right. We were talking earlier when we were talking about the notches. Well, of course, it wouldn't be an event without talking about notches.
Apparently.
So this Samsung developer event, Samsung showed off a number of notch designs, not just a notch design, a number of notch designs, presumably for upcoming devices. The Infinity U with a U-shaped notch, duh, because it's Infinity U. The Infinity V with, a V-shaped notch. And the Infinity O with a random circle cutout that looks really, really dumb. And then, of course, the new Infinity with no notch. So new Infinity would likely be the design when used under on-screen cameras and can be perfected, but that's a ways out, perhaps years. But Samsung is thinking about notch implementation for years to come.
All the different ways.
Yeah. When we were talking about notches, do these notches get you excited? Would you rather have an Infinity U, V, or O?
The Infinity No Notch. I mean,
Infinity No.
New Infinity.
The new Infinity. Yeah. The best Infinity.
They should have called it Infinity No. Oh man, Notch-a-rama.
I don't know about the Infinity O though. Just a whole punch.
I feel like that's unfair. How are you supposed to develop around that?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Like, come on.
I don't know. we have an API in Android that allows us to kind of tell where the notch is, and so we can work around it. I mean, and I actually did the research for at work on, like, are we notch ready? And I mean, really, as a developer... If you're notch ready, are you notch ready? Are you notchable? And really, it really only matters if you have like full screen contents, like maps, like YouTube. So I was kind of like, nope, don't care. And then I'll let the phone handle it. If you're on a Pixel 3, hopefully you don't have like the 15 notches bug. As a consumer, I don't even want to think about it. But as a developer, it's kind of like, especially for like, our app, we don't really deal too much with like full screen content. And even if we did, it's not a big deal. So as a consumer, I just want them to go away. Go away.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to use that excuse, against my next editor. I'm sorry, editor, but the Trello card was cut off by my notch and I just didn't see the due date. Sorry.
No, you just get a really fat status bar. It's just a really fat status bar. That's the worst. So your cards will not be cut off.
I know. I'm sorry.
So moving on from notches, though, it wouldn't be complete without in the too little too late department, Samsung is opening Bixby up to third-party developers. Developers can create apps that tap into the Bixby AI with voice for task automation. And they also expanded language support to Spanish, German, Italian, and French. So a little Bixby developer studio action going on there. So when with a lot of the stuff going on at Samsung and all that fun stuff, and you know, since you're our developer, our in-house developer, anything in these announcements by Samsung grab your attention? Is this get you going? Let me reconsider Samsung as a great platform. Not reconsider, but consider. You know what I mean? I'm gonna stop talking. Goodbye.
What's the diplomatic answer? I feel like a lot of this is hitting me as a consumer. And the only thing I really wonder is about the One UI and about, I don't know, like, I don't know too much about it, but the only thing I worry is that there's going to be something that apps can't, or that your app will be expected to hook into, which we're, I mean, spoiler alert, I don't think a lot of people are going to be doing. A lot of this, like I said, is kind of like, like, you know, like hopefully the device sorts itself out. The notches, like the UI software, the One UI, it's kind of like, it's so OEM centric that for an Android developer, it's kind of hard to kind of get too excited. I just more want to know, like, you know, and I don't know, like, for the audience, I don't know if this is like, Alien can maybe back me up on this. I feel like Samsung is an object of a lot of developer ire, because a kind of reality of Android developer life is OEM differences in how they, you know, implement their flavor of Android. And sometimes that results in bugs that are on one specific device for one like specific mm-hmm. user. And that happens a lot. That happens a lot on Samsung's. Mm-hmm. So I will be very honest in saying that I just hope that none of this screws with my build.
But as a
developer, it's kind of like, those are nice. That's cool. I mean, and power to all the Samsung users. I'm not trying to hate on Samsung users or anything. It's just kind of like, as a developer, it's like, that's nice. That's cool. Good for them. Yeah. So
I feel like that's a good way to conclude the Samsung Developers Conference, because that's ultimately, it's about wooing developers like you and being like, look, we've got really exciting stuff that we're also doing. And also, we sell way more phones than Google. So please come develop for us.
Well, here's the Bixby API. I mean, and that's the interesting kind of counterpoint, right? Yeah. Is that Samsung does sell so many phones, yet. And so
Samsung is one of the reasons that Android is as popular as it is today.
Absolutely.
Like, we have to give them, you know, we have to give credit where it's due.
Absolutely. Then you counterbalance that with the fact that, you know, developers encounter a lot of issues targeting Samsung for this or that. So that's, you know, that's like rock in a hard place, I guess.
Yeah, but I will say, like, total props on kind of taking the jump to foldable phones. Like, obviously mobile has to move really fast, and I think it's always about looking for the next big thing. And I mean, I'm excited. And like, again, I'm not trying to knock Samsung too much. I do think that, you know, like, experimenting with, like, you know, their own particular, like, you know, kind of like, even like touch was an experiment, like, or as like a exploration of what, you know, you can do with Android. I mean, that's the whole point of Android, right? Is that it's open. OEMs can come up with their own flavor of Android. Sure. And that's kind of the good part of it. And whether it does well or it doesn't do well, or whether a developer like me will kind of complain quietly to themselves at their computer,
right,
is kind of like here or there, whether people actually respond to it and like it and find it useful. And I mean, like, yeah, like, they're taking a dive with the foldable phones, and I'm excited to see where that goes. So yay Samsung.
Yay Samsung. All right, let's jump into the other kind of hardware for just a quick bit.
I'm personally on a journey to figure out what the heck my wearable is ever going to be, because I'm just not there yet. Yeah. But, you know, at least on the plus side, we've got some like Wear OS wearables kind of on the horizon to look forward to. So there's a new Fossil watch announced called the Sport Smartwatch. So it's the first to use the new Snapdragon 3100 chip. It comes in 41 millimeter and 43 millimeter sizes, which are a tad large for those of us with small wrists, but who knows? It's got interchangeable straps. It's water resistant. It comes in a variety of colors, including gray, pink, red, blue, green, and black. A very fossil-like way of selling watches. You know, you can always buy them in any color you want. It has an ambient mode, integrated heart rate sensor, which is great. You'll still get that information even if you don't, you know, want to take this thing to the gym, but you want to take it with you on your park walks. 350 milliamp battery, NFC and GPS capabilities, which is also great, and a not too bad price tag of $225. Pretty nice price tag for the holiday season, I would say, for anybody who kind of, I don't know. Maybe I have been getting a lot of questions from AAA listeners and watchers about like what kind of smartwatch to get, because this is like a really, this is kind of a difficult time. This is a difficult time for us in the Wear OS sphere. So who knows? Maybe this will satiate some of us. I'm looking forward to checking it out. I like fossil watches.
Yeah,
they're for everybody. And I'm an everybody.
Now, so 41 millimeter and 43 millimeter, those are still pretty large. Like I'm having a hard time envisioning.
We'll
like,
see.
Yeah.
Because it depends on the thickness of the watch. It depends on like how much it sticks up. I see that there's like a little, I don't want to call it like a little base that kind of like sits into, I'm assuming, to make room for that heart rate monitor. The LG Watch Style, which is a small watch and the most comfortable Wear OS watch I've worn, but that I don't wear anymore because of its very, very poor battery life. That one's comfortable, but it's so, you know, light on features. So it's kind of a trade-off. Hmm. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Interesting.
Right?
Are you off the wearable train, or were you ever on it?
Oh my gosh, I'm so still on the wearable train.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for this because I don't have it on me right now, but I'm still hanging on to my LG Sport watch, which is like way too thick for my wrist. And I'm actually really excited. I see that it has like NFC and GPS. I'm really looking for a replacement watch because the LG Sport watch has nowhere to be found. And it's doing, you know, that kind of weird thing that old tech starts to do. So I'm actually really excited because I use Google Fit all the time. I love maps because I'm that kind of person that likes to drive like this, and I need my directions without being too distracted. So I am excited. And I also am a big Fossil fan. So it's like the best.
They make women's watches. And I'm saying this right now as a cisgender woman, like I just want somebody to make watches for me. I'm really tired of seeing a watch come out and have it be so excited and just not have it be obviously for my wrists or my style.
Right.
Just give me something, not like, it doesn't need to be super. I don't need a giant pink watch. I just need something that is light and kind of fits in with my contemporary wear.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
And lets me pay with my wrist.
You should be able to have that, Flo.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you shouldn't have that.
So maybe this will be it.
And the LG Watch Sport, that's the one that you have, Wen? Looks like that was like early 2017. So,
oh gosh, yeah. It's
almost,
so big.
Almost 2 years.
It's been a while.
It's so big. I have to wear it on the very last band, and it still is loose enough that the heart rate monitor doesn't work.
Oh.
So it's bad.
One, yes.
It's really bad. Sweet. It has like the LTE, it has NFC, it has all the things, and it's just like I'm actually kind of been watch shopping because I can't take it anymore. So I'm actually super excited.
The LG Watch Sport is gigantic. Leo gave me his because he wasn't wearing it, and all it's done is sit in there because the handful of times that I put it on, like it feels huge on my wrist. You know what I mean? It feels like a big weight, like a big brick.
I mean, it's good for working out. You know, it's just like, you know, you wear two of them and then you just kind of like,
right.
So
up the ante a little bit. There we go.
Exactly.
Let's take a break and then we're going to thank a sponsor, and then we're going to come back and then we're going to check out some app news and go through all that. But first, let's take a break and thank the sponsor, who is CuriosityStream, the world's first streaming service addressing your lifelong quest to learn, explore, and understand. It's all about documentaries. And I love documentaries. I'm a huge fan of documentary TV, of documentary movies. It's actually founded by John Hendricks, who's the founder of the Discovery Channel. And I love that, but love the shows that are produced for Discovery Channel. This is available on many platforms. You can get, there's a web app, Roku, Android TV, of course, Xbox One, smart TVs, iOS, Chromecast, Amazon Fire. Pretty much you're going to find an app everywhere. Amazon Kindle, Apple TV. It's available worldwide. So this content can be available to you no matter where you are. Content spans science, nature, history, technology, society, lifestyle. And there's just a ton of really great content on there. Award-winning documentaries, including Stephen Hawking's Favorite Places, The Hunt for Dark Matter, A Birth of the Internet, Cyber War. Digits was one that I found. It's a documentary that's actually exclusive to CuriosityStream that dives into the depths of the internet. Has interviews with Vint Cerf and Ed Snowden, just to name a few. Very cool stuff. You can get unlimited access starting at just $2.99 a month, $2.99 a month. You can check out their premium plan, which includes Ultra HD and 4K streaming. So go to CuriosityStream.com/twit, CuriosityStream.com/twit, and you'll get unlimited access to the world's top documentaries and nonfiction series. And for our listeners, if you enter promo code TWIT, when you're prompted during the sign-up process, your membership is completely free for the first month. So you can check it out for free the first month, and you can watch a whole lot of documentaries in a month. So check it out. You're going to want to continue it. That's CuriosityStream.com/twit with code TWIT, and make sure you do that so you get that first month completely free. And we thank CuriosityStream for their support of this show. And now we've got just a couple of things in the app segment, so let's do it. All right, privacy is important, and Cloudflare launched a new Android app called 1.1.1.1. Do a search for it.
Awesome.
And it's named after its privacy-focused DNS service that they launched first earlier this year. The app does really one thing. It passes data on the device through Cloudflare's 1.1.1.1 DNS, which can keep an ISP from knowing the sites you visit. It's not necessarily better than VPN, but it's better than nothing, and it's really easy, and it's free. So if you're kind of curious about what this 1.1.1.1 actually is, it was created in response to what the company said was the DNS being used to censor groups online. And so passing the traffic through theirs, through 1.1.1.1, it's really hard to say this multiple times, allows them to actually protect those users, whereas without, they could not. So the app kind of makes all of this dead simple. So if you don't have a VPN, but you want to, you know, protect yourself at least a little bit better than you are completely unprotected, this is a way to do that. So do a search for it. It's actually cross-platform, so you can find it on Android, also on iOS. And yeah, TechCrunch was, I think the Twitter update from TechCrunch was, install this app now. So there you go.
There it is.
Yeah.
And as we've been talking about in the upcoming, we're going to talk about it in the arena in a couple seconds. 2018 is almost over, folks. Starting to wind down. And you could tell that it's starting to wind down because there's a lot of calls for voting in year-end, best-ofs, and things like that. And Google is no different. Google rolled out the Google Play Fan Favorite Awards 2018, and you can now go vote for your favorite app, game, and movie of 2018. Voting ends on Sunday, November 25th. And in looking at the apps that are available to be voted for, it looks as if none of them were any apps that were in the arena. I don't think so, at least.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I know we didn't talk about Tinder in the arena.
That has not made it in the arena yet.
Yeah,
we are
yeah.
all in relationships.
Yeah. The Reddit social, no, I don't think Reddit was either. I mean, there might be some older
Reddit app.
Yeah. Maybe we should look at some of these apps and get them in the arena. Maybe we just do a fan favorites arena version. Looking in the games, at least, though, I didn't see any other games that had made it to the arena either.
I mean, I came with PUBG, is kind of hard to even mention because it was such a known game.
I might suggest everyone check out Marvel Strike Force.
Okay. just saying.
Some neat fun games in there. So go vote, and you can also vote for your fan favorite movie, of which also you can vote for Avengers Infinity War and Black Panther. all good and fun. It's always fun. Actually, you should vote for Won't You Be My Neighbor, because that was the best movie of the year.
That was a really fantastic movie.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah. But they're not the only awards. The Material Design Awards 2018 got announced over at design.google, and recognizing the best in class designs from the design community. And there's some great apps in there like Captain Cook, Lyft, and Simple Habit Meditation. So definitely check out the Material Design Awards. Very cool to see. I've been using Lyft a little bit when I was out of New York. I was in Florida and I had to use car service, and the new Lyft design is really, really nice. Mm-hmm. It's very, very well, done. So good stuff to see things getting highlighted for Material Design.
Since we're talking about Material Design real quick, I thought I would ask you, Wen, about kind of Trello's approach. Now, you know, Google I/O had kind of a new version of Material Design, Material Theming. When something like that happens, how does that affect your team? Were you already working on it at that point, or do you feel the need, the pressure to do that, even though it's cross-platform? How does that cross-pollinate between both of the different types of apps?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, so normally we try to, I think our philosophy, at least at Trello, is that kind of iOS apps kind of follow iOS design principles, and that Material is kind of more in the Android side of things. And usually when it comes to integrating things, so it's always a question of what's in the roadmap, what kind of bandwidth do we have, and kind of like how much investment do we have to put it in. So what's really interesting with Material, and kind of going back to when it was introduced in Lollipop, is that it kind of started out with like very little developer support. Like, oh, look, you should have a button. Like, here's a floating action button that is round and that does this thing, and that there's this text view that does this thing. And there's actually like very little developer support for it. I think they learned their lesson a bit, because then we all started kind of complaining for the buttons and all the drop shadows and everything. And that you can kind of tell that Google has invested a lot in making these changes to make your app more materially. And they've kind of made that easier for us to access. They have components that we can use now. They're introducing kind of new, kind of more optimized widgets and other kind of UI elements to make it easier. So in terms of like when we start integrating these kind of new ideas into like Trello, that's kind of a hard question, because again, it's kind of like part of us working with our designers, with our product. And because Trello itself has its own design system, we call it Nachos. So it's kind of like the Trello visual language. So it takes a lot of work to take your brand, integrate it, and kind of understand how that is expressed in Material. So usually it's a lot of work with like us and the designers and trying to figure out what that means and kind of any technical limitations we have to that. And then once we kind of decide on, okay, we want to do this, this is how we're going to do it, getting into like, okay, what two components do we need? Like, and how do we do this in a way? Like, and with developers, we love to do things kind of like in segments iteratively. So it's always like, okay, do we do a one shot, like fix all the things, or do we kind of like slowly kind of incrementally kind of move towards Material? So it's a really complicated question, and it's always going to be difficult. We actually did a big Material rewrite. This is before I ever worked at Trello, but we actually did a huge Material rewrite back in 2014. And that was also kind of a big effort. So we are definitely thinking about it, but it's never kind of like hey, jump in the pool and let's go, and we'll be there in like, you know, whatever a good time for a 200-meter race is. I don't know. That metaphor kind of just fell away from me. But it's because you want to be, and it actually makes it easier. So like following Material, like usually following these patterns that Google sets out makes a lot of things easier. And generally, if you kind of are a well-behaved, we'll call it, or well well-organized developer, kind of migrating to the new things is easier, but it's always a struggle.
Yeah.
But we're excited about it.
Right on. Cool. Thank you. Flo, we have an email, and this is a cool email because I think it really speaks to a lot of the people who watch this show and are fanatical about Tasker.
It's normally a tip. This is actually a tip from one of our watchers named Sean. So Sean wrote in as a longtime Android user, the first application I install when moving from one device to another is Tasker. I have several tasks that I've created and have helped tremendously in the automation of my phone and would go as far as to say my life. One function I use involves Tasker sending me an SMS message to alert me an event, such as when my phone is charged so I don't leave it connected to a power source, helping to extend the life of my battery. I receive the message on my smartwatch. Apparently, Google is making changes to how apps access and handle SMS and call permissions. I'm all for better security on Android. However, in this case, this change will negatively impact how I use, and I'm sure how others use, Tasker. Because of these changes, starting in January, Tasker will no longer be able to access or handle SMS messages and calls. I'm sure you have viewers that use Tasker, and I hope that providing awareness this issue will result in Google reconsidering their decision that Tasker is ineligible to access these permissions. Now, if we recall correctly, this whole thing happened because Google's been trying to protect its users. But I do remember that when that was announced, a lot of people had cited Tasker being one of the things that would eventually fall a little bit in feature usage, at least for the people who've really relied on it for those like precise formulas that they made. So it's just something to keep in mind.
That's a bummer. Yeah. So basically the change specifically is that obviously they're cracking down on phone and SMS permissions.
Yeah.
The only apps that are allowed to set a user's default, only apps that are allowed or set as a user's default can actually make that specific request once this change is made. So therefore, because Tasker is not like a replacement dialer or a replacement messaging app, it could no longer request those actions, request those permissions to phone and SMS. And obviously that makes things more secure, right? That not every app can request those. It's only apps that you would actually set as a user to be your default dialer or default messenger. But that's going to essentially break a large portion of what Tasker has been for many years. They're working on an update to Tasker that will no longer have those features baked in. That's going to probably roll out in January. They say, unless Google changes this, I'd be really surprised if Google changed this. As the developer on the show, and like, yes, we're going to throw it to you again. this has got to be, I imagine, kind of a nightmare scenario in some ways for a developer, right? You've built this highly successful app. People use it. Especially this app is so customizable and everything modular. And then suddenly a big change is made to the OS, the underlying infrastructure of the OS, that is going to break your app to a certain degree, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's always a danger. And especially, I think that often as a developer, there's kind of a class of permissions that you kind of understand are very, obviously they're very security impactful permissions, like SMS, like phone. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, I mean, I know that, so I'm not a Tasker user, so I apologize, if I'm a little off the point here. But like, it is tough. And a lot of times as a developer, if you can, you try to kind of reduce your usage of really highly impactful, kind of like highly security impactful things. Like, I know a very common sin that a lot of developers had is to use like the device ID as like an ID for the user. Mm-hmm. I've heard of lots of apps doing that. And that's generally that's a bad idea. And that they were actually encouraging us not to do that. That was like one specific thing that Google had a kind of security centric talk at the Android Dev Summit last year. And they're encouraging us to not do that. And like, even at, you know, like at my company and other places I've worked at, there's always a push internally to kind of move towards more kind of privacy centric practices, but it does make life harder as a developer. And I mean, that's kind of like the trade-off, is that the more power the user gives you as a kind of like agent on their phone, the more you can do for them. But also, if you're a bad actor or if you're a bad actor, that also gives you the power to do really bad things. And so I think that erring on the side of you know, like Tron fighting for the user is a good thing. And that unfortunately it does mean that that will handcuff or kind of, you know, obliterate features for us as developers. It's kind of, I feel like, and I know this sucks. This is not a good answer. This is not something that's going to make a user feel better at night, but it's kind of just how mobile is. And I feel like there's a lot of things that start out open on Android, or that, you know, we're kind of just decisions that were made before that were probably overall in the terms of like the net positive of the world of all mobile users were bad things and that they're trying to alleviate. But that means that some things like Tasker, who are like good actors who do have very good functionality to offer their users, kind of get caught in the crossfire, as we're trying to move everyone towards like a better, secure, more private world, which we need. But it's just, it's kind of just S-H-I-T happens. Can I say that? Like,
yeah.
Can I say
you're saying
letters?
You just did. Yeah.
But it's kind of those things. You have to be aware of those things. When you access APIs that are kind of very intense that require permissions like that, you kind of take a risk. And my love and sympathy goes out to Tasker users, because I know as a developer how much that sucks. So
Yeah. All right. Awesome stuff. Ron, you have the next bit.
Yes. We want to thank our last sponsor of the evening. We want to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, let's talk about buying a home. All right. A lot of us have done it. I've done it. Maybe you've done it. And because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home these days, and it's causing a lot of anxiety with people. Trust me, I can relate to that anxiety. The rising interest rates is never fun when you're looking to purchase a home. Well, luckily, our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. With a name like that, how can you go wrong? Here's how it works. Step one, answer a few simple questions. They'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. Step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours and give you a verified approval, which gives you the strength of a cash buyer. And if you've done any real estate purchasing, you know that a cash buyer is the best position you want to be in. And luckily with Quicken Loans and verified approval, you could be that. Step three, once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. And this is where the magic happens, everyone, seriously. First, they're going to lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, here's the best part. If interest rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. It's magic. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. So listen, if you're shopping for a home, if you're getting ready to move, if you want to, you know, kind of upgrade your living situation, you can get started right now. Go to rocketmortgage.com/android. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/android. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right. Well, that said, it's time to get into the arena.
Many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Nice. I like the Ron throw to the internet, or to the arena.
I'm just going to throw to the internet, Jason.
Via the internet. Ron, you're just happy because you won last week.
Did I win? I was losing last I checked.
Well, I see inbox.
Was there a last minute surge? Inbox there was a last minute surge.
42%.
Yes. Yes.
First place, second place, right. I'm ping pong king at 41%. Ooh, that was a last minute surge. Wow.
I got to say, when I checked this morning, ping pong king was up 43% to inbox at 41. But now, wow.
I demand a recount.
Yeah.
I guess nobody wanted to save the planet with their web surges. That's fine.
That's true.
It's apparently already overheated.
Apparently nobody does want to save the planet.
Well, no.
So, okay, Ecosia, right? Ecosia browser?
Yes, yes.
17% at third place. So that means that, Ron, you are the big winner.
Not only am I the big winner, but Jason, with that big win, unfortunately, you've been eliminated from winning the arena this year. Mathematically, it happened. Bad news, brother.
I could have held on for one more week.
I honestly thought I lost that one. That's amazing. So 45 weeks of the arena. Flo has been eliminated. She's in last place with 93 points. She was eliminated last week. Jason's been eliminated. He's got 103 points. I'm in second place with 119 points. And the guests are sitting pretty and with 134 points. Dang. And now the question is, will I be able to catch the guests?
I don't know.
Or is it? Or is it
a lot of pressure right now?
Yeah, I know, right?
a lot of pressure.
Well, we won't know for a while because Ron, you're going last. Flo, you're going first.
Oh, I'm going first.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Because you lost last week.
Oh.
So I'll show it off for you while you talk about it.
All right, Jason's gonna. Ooh, we got a movable mic there. Jason's gonna show off my app, but first I'm gonna tell you about it. And what I'm going to tell you is that, you know, when you are studying the past, you need archives of the past, you know, much how I would go to the library and pick up microfiche to write the papers I did back in college about the history of newspapers and magazines. I go online to find old videos of things I used to watch on television. So one of those places I like to go is Daily Motion. And lately, my husband and I have really been into watching old Nickelodeon game shows. And so the way we try to find them is through Daily Motion. And it's nice to have the app because at least the app, you could cast anyway from a browser window, no problem. But at least the app, you can use the videos in the background. You can use your phone while the video is playing on, you know, through your Chromecast. You don't have to worry about it playing through Chrome. So the nice thing too is that if you log in with your Google username or your Facebook account, you can fave playlists, you can follow people based on what they upload. Maybe you have a person that you really like who uploads, like, you know, MTV reality TV, or maybe they upload your favorite Russian news. And you could just watch it. I don't know if there's Russian news on Daily Motion, but I'm assuming there probably is. I do know that Daily Motion is used around the world for other sort of news broadcasts. So if you're interested in that, you could search for that. That's Daily Motion. You just search for a video. So I think, Jason, what you should look for, I think you should search for Supermarket Sweep.
Is that the...
You should show people Supermarket Sweep.
Supermarket.
Yeah, Supermarket Sweep.
Okay.
And you can actually search by year if you want.
Ah, Jennings.
Jennings is the name of the user who's uploading these things.
Hey, look, so thank you, Jennings. Hey, it's a full episode of
it's
your
a full
favorite 20, show.
24 minutes. It starts out just, you know, and then you can easily cast it and watch people run through a grocery store while dropping perfectly timed marketing slogans about chocolate bars and Scotch Brite.
So here's the thing about this. I watched this show on TV when it was originally on, and now you're like talking about it ironically. Like, that's very funny.
Am I talking about it ironically?
It used to be on the Lifetime channel. Me and my sister loved watching this. It was great.
I forgot about this show before it was on the Lifetime channel.
It was on ABC.
Yeah.
I love their sweaters. I'm just a big fan of their sweaters with the collars popping through. Just going to say.
So I like Daily Motion because you can find stuff on here that you can't find on YouTube. Honestly,
yeah,
I was able to find the Sailor Moon, the Deke dub from the early 90s that I first watched on UPN when I was a wee one. I was able to find all the episodes of The Real World, which is very difficult to find because they're not on DVD and they're not really streaming anywhere either. So if you're kind of into searching for things and you just really want to look for some content that's just not streaming or whatever, just try out Daily Motion and just kind of also accept the fact that there's a lot of ads. It's free content.
I just want you to see how many episodes of Supermarket Sweep there are on Daily Motion.
I have a lot of playlists similarly. I have a Double Dare playlist. You can search for Double Dare by year. I like to search between 1990s and 1992.
Dang, people just like, yeah, there's going to be somebody looking for Supermarket Sweep. I'm going to be the one that brings it all to the internet.
Yeah.
And digitize every single episode and put it up on Daily Motion. Fantastic. That's Daily Motion, and it's free. Daily Motion, explore and watch videos. And that's what Flo did. She explored and she watched videos. All right. Mine's going to be real quick. Mine is a game you may or may not remember throughout the years that I'm just kind of a sucker for pixel art and stuff. And, you know, I've got a pixel phone, so it makes a whole lot of sense. One of the game companies that I was a big fan of back in the day was Konami. And I'm not really entirely sure exactly what Konami's doing nowadays, but they released a game called Pixel Puzzle Collection. And I've been having a little bit of fun with this. So we'll go ahead and jump in. It's all like it revels in the kind of retro, kind of history of Konami's library, essentially. But basically, this is it P-Cross or Picross or whatever. It's a whole genre of games where you basically you go through and you follow the numbers and try and figure out where you draw and where you reject. So, for example, we've got this grid, right? If there's two numbers stacked, that basically means I've got two pieces that are occupied and then a blank space separating it, at least one. So I couldn't, based on what I have here, it's impossible for me to know where the piece is and where the blank space is. But here it's two and two, right? So I would know, great, two and two. Those are solved. And then it reduces or eliminates or satisfies whatever's up here. And you kind of follow the logic through. In some ways, you know, it's reminiscent of Minesweeper, although it's not really, but you're kind of using these numbers to really kind of identify certain things. I would know that if that one is there and there has to be a separation, that at least one separation goes there. I could probably assume that that one goes right there and that the other one is somewhere in there. And you keep following that logic all the way through until you've solved the puzzle, basically. So if that's two on the top, I know that that would have to be two and that there would be an X there. And so on and so forth until you finish the puzzle. And once you do, you end up being rewarded here with pixelated things in your collection. You end up solving these puzzles and you end up with little kind of archival pieces from the history of Konami games. And it's just kind of fun to go through here and collect them as you go along. So if you like Konami, if you like pixel art, and you like just kind of like an easy to pick up kind of logic game, then look for Pixel Puzzle Collection. It is free. There are ads in the game. They're very unobtrusive. They're just down at the bottom there on like the menu screen. They don't even interfere with the game itself. Pixel Puzzle Collection. And that's it. All right, Wen, I have your app installed, and I have to say, like, I played it for like 5 minutes prior to the show. Mm-hmm. And I am super stoked. Like I'm installing this on my little girl's tablets. They will love it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, go ahead and talk about it and I'll show it off.
Awesome. So I picked Hidden Folks. I think on Alaric just downloaded it. I bought it. So it's like, it's $3.99. I just bought it the other day because it was like an editor's choice in the Play Store. And I don't, is Where's Waldo still a thing? Is that, mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's very much like Where's Waldo, where you have this really pretty, like hand-drawn illustration and you're trying to find like little people. And there's like usually like five or six like people that you have to find. There are little kind of cute little clues. And you basically just kind of explore this adorable little animated landscape and try to find, you know, these people. One's napping, one's playing guitar. Sometimes you'll be asked to find a little butterfly. And it's just delightful. And it's not just like Where's Waldo where you kind of just had to look at a static picture, but you actually have to interact with it. You, like in this like camping scene, you have to like maybe sometimes cut down some like bamboo to find someone hiding behind. You open up tent flaps to try to find people. And it's just like a really delightful way to kind of pass the time. It's really funny. There's always a lot going on. So you can kind of just enjoy the kind of cute, funny things going on in the scene. And I believe it's very, you know, family friendly. So you can just kind of like, you know, easily play this with, you know, anyone of any age. And it's a really great time.
Yeah, it's cool. And I mean, I love the art, the kind of line art, and just the fact that it's so dense. And this is just one level. Like, I solved the first level, which was really straightforward and pretty easy by comparison. Then this loaded up. I was like, wow, this is going to take me forever.
Oh, go to the top right where all those kind of like the top right and see all those little bushy things. You have to actually tap on them repeatedly to kind of cut them down. Spoiler, that's what I was talking about. See, so there might be people hidden. So it's really interactive. It's super interactive. Like,
hey, I found a panda.
Hey! Yeah, so I've actually had to poke a crocodile. Oh, spoilers. You might have to poke things as they throw stuff up, or in a very cute cartoony way, not in a gross kind of way, but it's a really great app for as a time killer. I actually play it before bed. Sometimes that sometimes kind of like counter bedtime, because I was like, I really want to find this last person. But it's a really kind of cute, hand drawn, well done, just way to pass the time.
I just poked an alligator or crocodile.
Oh, I think he's just growling at you, like, why are you poking me? Yeah, why are you bothering
me? Alone, I'm sleeping. I love this. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I had the the highlights, and you search in the picture to find the five things that are hidden in there, and that's exactly what this is. But it's so well done. Like, I love the art style of it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you get lost in it. It's got really cute, you know, the adorable kind of sounds and everything. It's just a really great exploration app. So, oh, there's someone in the waterfall. Yeah. Hey, I found it.
Yay.
Coming. Yay. Anyways, great pick. Hidden Folks. It's $3.99 and totally worth it. I bet this would be awesome on a really nice, like, larger screen tablet or something like that. All right, Ron, yours was on my list to do, but you beat me to it.
Yeah, well, because it's a good one. And I teased earlier, we're talking about big smartphones, you know, like if you're talking about the Galaxy Note or the Pixel 3 XL or any phone that is large, we often complain that my thumb doesn't reach high enough and I can't actually get to the upper part of the screen. Well, Samsung had their solution, which you talked about earlier. But if you didn't like that solution, you could just install Reachability Cursor, the one-handed mode mouse pointer. And basically, as Jason's showing you right now, this app allows you to turn on accessibility function in the settings, and you can create a little trackpad area in the lower portion of the screen that gives you a mouse pointer in the upper part of the screen, so you could reach all the way up to the upper left-hand corner from the lower right-hand corner and vice versa, and actually interact with the top portion of your screen. I showed this to my wife and she goes, oh, come on, get a smaller phone. It's amazing. So basically, it's real simple. You create what they call a swipe pad, which is a little area in the bottom lower portion of your phone. You can adjust. Here's Jason showing you. You can put it left and right or right and left, and you can adjust how big the area is. And that basically sits on top of your phone interface. And then by swiping over, it gives you the mouse pad, the mouse dot that allows you to move things around. And it almost reminds me of like video games and stuff like that. I remember APB, that game where you were a cop car and you were driving, and then there was a little dot in front of you, and that's what you used to target people to pull them over. Yep. It's like that almost. But it really does allow you to access the upper portion of your screen.
I'm sorry.
You can also, you can adjust the behavior like Jason was showing. You can turn on or off haptic feedback. You can also adjust the cursor in the tracking area, and you give it a little sense of, depending on your finger, you can make the cursor area smaller, the tracking area bigger. All works proportionally, which is really, really cool. And it's just neat. They really thought this through, and it's just a bizarre solution to a real problem. It's free to download. They do have an in-app purchase that allows you to purchase the pro version. It allows you to customize the appearance and behavior of everything. And you can add in edge actions for notifications and quick settings and things like that. And it even supports drag gestures with the cursor and long clicks with the cursor and stuff like that. So support your devs. Pony up for the in-app purchase to get the full unlocked power of Reachability Cursor. And it's been a while, and it's funny because Wade County in the chat room says, as we reached the point where I'm bringing the wacky apps – I'll be honest, it's been a long time since I found a real wacky app, but this is a wacky app that actually is valid. If you have small hands and a big phone, it's hard to reach it with one hand. Now you can. Reachability cursor, check it out in the Google Play Store. It's just worth it just for the demo alone, just to play with it alone. Go to the effects. Can you go back? I'm sorry, Jason. Can you go to the effects on the in there? This is, I love. So you can change the color and the clicks and all this sort of stuff. They really did a good job of it. I like it. I like this a lot. So
longer the trail.
Yeah. So
right on.
Yeah. So Reachability Cursor, free in the Google Play Store. Check it out. It's worth it just for the look.
Reachability Cursor, one-handed mode, mouse pointer, unreleased, as it says in the Play Store. All right, it's time for you to vote. AAAPoll.com/395 is not working. Oh, that's right. No, I put that in there wrong. It's twit.to. Sorry. This is what I get for doing this right before we started. Okay, twit.to/AAAPoll395. That's the real place to go.
All right, there it is.
There we go. twit.to/AAAPoll395 is a Daily Motion Pixel Puzzle Collection, Hidden Folks, or Reachability Cursor. Place your vote, and we'll check in on it next week, except we will see what Victor's going to do right now. Hidden Folks gets it.
Folks.
I had a feeling. 43% for both Reachability Cursor and Hidden Folks. So it could be a race between those two. The two winners so far, Guest is far in the lead, though. This was great. Thank you so much for hopping on tonight and giving us your perspective on all this stuff. It wouldn't have been nearly as awesome without you, so thank you.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate y'all letting the developer talk so much. This has been such a developer-heavy news week.
Yes.
Really had fun talking to y'all about it. Ron, thank you so much also for saying support the devs.
Support your devs.
App writing is a lot of work. We don't mind a little bit of support every now and again. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just the price of a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you guys deserve a lot of support because you guys, developers are what make our phones sing, basically. You guys make the apps that make our phones awesome. So thank you. Where do you want people to go? Randomlytyping.com, find you on Twitter. What do you think?
Yeah. So my website is randomlytyping.com. If you're a person of the developer persuasion, I have blog posts. I link to my channel, Android Dialogues, youtube.com/AndroidDialogues, where we talk to people in the Android community. I also speak a lot at conferences and stuff, so you can find a lot of my stuff there. But if you just want to chat or just ping me about anything, find me on Twitter, Queen Code Monkey.
Right on. Thank you again, Wen. It's always a pleasure. And then let's see here. Ron, what about you?
Yes. So I don't often talk about my day job that often, but I do want to mention yesterday Stan Lee passed away, which is very tragic and sad. He's definitely one of my childhood idols. If you go to Marvel.com, there's a great tribute video and a whole bunch of articles kind of celebrating his legacy and his inspiration. And if you enjoyed any of the Marvel movies for the past 10 years or comic books or whatever, it's because of Stan. So definitely wanted to call that out and have everybody take a moment and enjoy Stan's legacy. Sad stuff. Legend, American legend. Nobody will ever be like him. And happier news. My other podcast, my latest podcast is Still Rolling, finalepodcast.com. Came out with a new episode today about the British Office. Last week we did the U.S. Office. And this week we did the UK version of The Office and their series finale, which was a Christmas special. This is one of my favorite episodes we've done. So please go to Finale Podcast, give it a listen, rate and review it, do all the fun stuff. If you like TV, check it out, finalepodcast.com.
Thank you, Ron. Always fun, man. And good work. And what about you, Flo? What you got working on?
What about me? Yesterday I had a piece go up at Android Police about my opinions.
Good.
So go read that. It's about my opinions about Chrome OS, of which I have many because I've officially been using this platform for like almost 2 years. It'll be 2 years in February is our anniversary.
Nice.
Me and Chrome OS.
Wow.
I know. We'll be celebrating. I'm taking it out to dinner. Also, if you would like, I am blogging at my site, at florenceion.com. I wrote a little like recap of the developers conference. I blog a couple times a week. I'm queuing up your questions right now that you were sending me through the form at my website, and those will be going up over the holiday week. So I will help you do some of your shopping, but stay tuned for that. That's next week, and I'm working on that right now. So
radical.
Check me out.
Don't miss it. Check Flo out. Thank you, Flo. And what about you, Victor? Should I just say thank you, or do you have something to say today?
No, I want to thank you for that app, Jason. I would have voted for it if it wasn't for Hidden Folks, but
yeah,
because Gradius is my jam.
Okay, so. Well, see, I'm telling you, Gradius is in there. I saw it with my own eyes.
Yeah.
So, all right. Thank you, Victor. Appreciate it. But seriously, Hidden Folks is really awesome. You can find me all over the Twit Network, of course, doing the shows that we do here. That's what I do. This is my job, after all, and I love it. So it's great to have you guys along. I should reiterate one last time, bestofs, twit.tv/bestof. If you go there, you can place a vote and see this wonderful picture of Megan and Leo. For your favorite episodes, moments, all that kind of stuff, because we are in the process of picking out these moments. I think by the end of this week, I have to have my moments selected for All About Android, which is probably what I'm going to be doing tomorrow. So if you get some moments in there, and if you have already, thank you. And if you haven't, if you think of something, put as much information as you can in there, and I will pick some moments for the best of. That'll be shown at the end of the year, and this goes for all the shows too. So all the shows in the network, help us out. Let us know what you think. But that's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails, AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We have an Arena apps list. All the apps that we've had in the Arena can be found at twit.to/Android apps. You can find show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. And you can watch us live at twit.tv/live. We record every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at, like I said, twit.tv/live, or sit in the office, in the audience, like Elaine, who's sitting in here, who probably, I'm guessing, emailed tickets at twit.tv. That's usually how people make this happen. So you could do that as well and sit in here and watch.
Bye,
us.
Bye, Elaine.
Bye.
Bye. No, we're saying goodbye now, Flo. We're saying goodbye to Elaine.
Bye. That's
I'm
it for this
hello.
Week.
I never say goodbye.
No, don't ever say goodbye. Except that we're going to say goodbye, and we'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The only time you can say goodbye is right now.
Bye, Elaine.